Welcome, everyone, to the second episode of Mentality Monsters. I'm your host, Kyle Langan, and I'm joined by my co-host, Fedja Buzancic. First and foremost, we'd like to say thank you for so much of the positive feedback that we received for the first episode. We are recording this on Friday, October 1st, and we feel great about, you know, the direction of what we're doing here and doing it for the audience. Really, there are so many great topics to dive into in the world of sports. Fedja and I were just discussing Tom Brady and his return to New England before recording this podcast. So in an effort to look at different personalities in sports and extrapolate what makes them great and communicate that to you all as an audience, there's so much to dive into and we're so excited to do it.
Yeah, great to be back. Episode two, it's exciting. We got a good topic for everyone today too.
Yes, today we'll be discussing the namesake of this show, Mentality Monsters, and exactly where that comes from. In short, it's a nickname for Liverpool Football Club players during their 2019 to 2020 stretch of 40 games unbeaten. This title was bestowed upon them by their coach and native of Germany, a man named Jurgen Klopp. Now, personally, I first heard of Klopp while reading a book called Das Reboot. The book was written by Raphael Honigstein and was one of the things that really ignited my interest in the sport of soccer. The first was, you know, working for a company that asked me to cover this sport from a content and news perspective. And so I started to watch the games and I was interested in the mechanics of what made a team successful. So this was around the time that Germany was competing for the World Cup title and ultimately won the World Cup title. So I bought Honigstein's book on exactly how they did it. And while Klopp never coached the German national team, he was an integral figure in the book because of his work with German club Mainz 05. This club's colors also helped us create the colors for the podcast logo. So,
yeah, which an interesting story about Mainz and about Klopp. So Klopp is a man who's known for diving into any challenge and overcoming any challenge throughout his life. So he talks a lot about how he's both faced adversity, overcome adversity, and then when it's overcome him, how he's learned from it and used those learnings to better his next challenge against adversity. So he actually became the manager of Mainz because he was voted to be the manager. I think it was around 2001, early 2000s. He was a defender on the team, and his team voted him to be the manager. So that's how he ended up jumping into coaching. He was pulled into it by his own teammates and then eventually became this ultra-successful coach that we know today.
And what's interesting, an interesting parallel to that, is, you know, the way the DFB, which is the German name for their footballing organization nationally, you know, they tend to gravitate towards these personalities as well who have great ideas in their native country, Klopp being one of them. So similar to the way his teammates voted him as this figure to ultimately become the manager, Germany looked at things that he was doing at that specific club stylistically, as well as, you know, with attitude, emotion, and personality to help develop, you know, their national team. And what struck me personally about Klopp and watching his Liverpool teams closely over the last several years was the concept of having a vision. And for me, the telltale sign of a great vision in action is that it's built upon what you want to be and where you want to go. The possibilities that you want to create and how to make that happen. So the contrast is it's not informed by the events of the past. That's a distinct characteristic of great visions. A perfect example, you know, here in America is the LA Rams. You know, they have a vision for the type of player they want on their team and the type of personality, and they were willing to go about acquiring that in a way that nobody had ever done before. They haven't had a first round draft pick in like a half decade or more. You know, they're willing to trade those picks away to get linchpin type personalities and players like Jalen Ramsey. You know, they had a quarterback, Jared Goff, who was able to get them to a Super Bowl and subsequently, you know, had several double-digit win seasons, went to a divisional round last year. They weren't satisfied with that. They had a vision for more, and they gambled to go after Matthew Stafford and gave up more first-round picks. So, you know, this takes guile and nerve and guts to have a vision. You know, my team, the New York Giants, is a perfect example of a team that's stuck in the past, really. They're indexing more on what has happened in the past than what is possible for the future. You know, they talk about a style of play. And when I say they, I'm really referencing their general manager, you know, and their coaching staff. You know, they reference a style of play that is old school, that is the way that they've won before, things they've had success doing in the past. You know, teams are rewarded now in that league for having a vision and going all in on it. So to circle back to Klopp and to Germany, Germany was falling into the Giants pattern. And Klopp's new style and his attitude helped to break this. So, in fact, is we all slip into this pattern at different junctures in our life, where we're not indexing on what's possible. We're indexing, you know, what we can do based on what's already taken place. My first encounter personally with the value of having a vision was after doing a coaching business program called The Strong Coach, where founder and facilitator Mike Bledsoe, he was insistent that entrepreneurs must have a vision for their clients' life as well as their own lives. And, you know, within the program, this concept was built on the idea of having a perfect day. So the exercise we were encouraged to do was write out what our perfect day is. And we were asked to do this numerous times because the first time we do it, everyone in the group is going to create their perfect day based on the resources that they have at their disposal now, where they currently live, how much income they have, and it's all based on what already exists or what's happened in the past. And we're encouraged to evolve this into something broader and something greater for ourselves, so we can also do it, you know, for our clients as business owners. Yeah, I thought this was the biggest crock of shit. First time I heard it, you know, I paid for a program to learn about business, and I was told to, you know, create my vision for a perfect day. And, you know, I've learned now, this approaching 2 years since I was a part of this, and just how true and how much utility it can have, that when you write this out, you really start to gravitate towards that, and the resources that become necessary to help you live that vision, they start to gravitate and make their way towards you.
It works a lot like daily affirmations. The idea behind daily affirmations is that if you choose a statement, something along the lines of, you know, one of my daily affirmations is, you know, I will leverage my talent stack to create nomadic wealth. And that affirmation for me is about taking the collection of skills that I've built over the past couple of years and using them to create independent income and independent wealth for myself that I can pick up and take anywhere I want, because I want to be able to have the mobility and freedom to live anywhere I want and do anything I want with my money. The idea behind an affirmation is that you write that statement, you know, 5 to 10 times every morning. And by doing so, you're programming your subconscious mind to begin to make moves in the direction of achieving that affirmation or that goal. And so that perfect day exercise is something very similar. It contextualizes and visualizes what you really want. And then your mind in the background is able to start to do the things that are necessary to get you there. And over time, those small incremental moves are gonna get you closer and closer to where you wanna be and to the life that you wanna live.
Yeah, the power of the subconscious mind is incredible. You know, one of the indicators for how to make these work for you is found in a language pattern. So if you find yourself saying, oh, I see when people make a point, or, you know, in conversation, or oh, I feel you, or I hear that indicates how your subconscious mind works. is it sound based, is it sight based, or is it feeling based? And so by creating the day, you cover all bases. And now, you know, you're doing that, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the line is when this perfect day is taking place, and you're visualizing it, you're hearing, all the elements are there to create a magnetism between your subconscious and this outcome. And again, to tie this back to, you know, to sport and to personal success, is it's important to have incredible detail in the way that, you know, you want your team to be prepared, how you want them to show up on game day, the type of nutrition that they have, the workout regimen. I mean, how do they feel when they wake up in the morning? This incredible level of detail is what yields success. I mean, you know, we hear folks like Bill Belichick being detail oriented. Well, what does that mean? This is what it means, you know, from front to back, having a vision. You know, so when I read about Klopp, and when we created this show, this was one of the things that stood out as a pillar of success in you know, Klopp's career and for Germany and successful programs in any sport, as well as for Fedja and I both.
I looked a lot at Klopp's time at Liverpool, because there are so many things that about Liverpool as a club that relate to the ideas that you presented when you were kicking off the episode, the idea that a vision has to look forward instead of looking back. There are also a lot, Klopp did a lot to sell the vision and ingrain the vision that he had for the team in the within not only the team itself, the players, but the organization, and then the fans too. He united all of these different groups of people into one cause that then transformed the culture of the team into something that was transcendent and supportive of the things that he wanted to accomplish. So Liverpool, you mentioned the Giants looking back and looking at what they had done in the past and how they wanted to do it. Liverpool was very much like that too.
Yes.
But they did it in a different way. They did it in a more kind of woe is me way, where they had such a large gap in time between their last major championship that they began to build this pressure and this anxiety throughout their fan base and throughout the team that was impacting everyone within the organization, everyone within the team, and even the fans themselves. So what would happen is anytime the players or the team would get into these big moments, they would succumb to this pressure and this anxiety because they would feel this overwhelming sense of failure and this inevitability of falling apart and falling short of that ultimate goal. And so when Klopp came in, his biggest objective was to create a unity among these different groups. Yes. But when he talked about how he would instill that culture and instill that unity, really what he was creating was a space where it was safe to fail. He wanted the players, the organization, the fans to understand that failure, as he would say, failure is information. You learn, you take in that information, you learn from it, and then you move on. And so when Klopp talked about his mentality monsters, what he was talking about was reaction to failure. And we talked about this in the last episode with mastery mindset and the idea that skills improve over time and that your reaction to failure is the most important thing that you can master in your life. Because if you react in a positive way and continue trucking along, you're going to build upon those failures and eventually overcome them, and you'll be fine in the end. And so when Klopp was able to instill this safety net where players felt the ability to fail safely, knowing that they wouldn't get slaughtered if something bad happened or you know, if an outcome didn't go the way they thought it would, all of a sudden they can relax, they can be more free, more experimental, more lively in their approach, and they can start to succeed in ways that they weren't able to before. So his definition of mentality monsters, to me and all the things I read and looked at about him, it was really boiled down to that reaction to failure and creating that space where you can learn from failure in a way that builds instead of breaks down.
Do you think there's a difference between a skill and an ability?
A skill and that's a great question.
I would contend that what he's really describing is them tapping into their ability, because a skill is binary. Either you possess the skill or you don't possess the skill. It's like riding a bike. Like, I have the skill to ride a bike. And so I believe what Liverpool was struggling with was this distinction. All the players had the skill necessary to win championships during this time. And when you believe that you have the skill, but the results aren't coming, what happens? You blame outside shit. You engage in the victim mentality. When there's a binary equation, like whether I have the skill or I don't have it. Well, I have it. So if I'm not succeeding, it must be something else's fault. Ability is something you curate over a lifetime, which is, as you said, it's down to the relationship with failure. So by him creating that comfortable environment where failure is information, he was able to tap into the player's ability.
And you can cultivate that ability too. Like, that ability has to be developed and grown over time. But you're 100% right. The Liverpool players did have the skills and the capability. It was their attitude and their inability to protect their mindset from those setbacks and those failures that was the linchpin that kept keeping them back.
Yeah, there's two ways to create advancement in your life, and that's what we all crave deep down is, when we see, feel, hear, and recognize progress, we believe we're headed towards freedom. And there's two ways to achieve it. One is to add skills. So, your resume, right? If you want to apply for jobs as a, project manager or somebody in analytics, you need to get Google Analytics certified if you want to do a specific job, or learn to code if you want to be in it. So you add skill. The other way to advance is to have a better relationship with the story going on in your own mind around failure. That's weeding the garden. There's two ways to curate the garden. Plant seeds, weed the weeds. And we have such an addictive relationship, our society, with planting more seeds, more seeds, more seeds, more seeds. We forget to pull the weeds. There's only so much room in that garden. So it's addition and subtraction. And, shout out to Angelo Sisco with that equation, my good friend. Hope to have him on in the near future in a brilliant segment around that same topic. When we're able to weed, we can create so much more room for these growing skills. So the parallel with Liverpool is, if I had touched on it, they had such a bad relationship with, that time in their history where they weren't winning as frequently. And it started to weigh. Against what they could add to their scheme and what they could add to their culture. So, the two ways to advance, one of them is highly overlooked, in my opinion, in our society, which is improving that relationship with our own narrative and our own failures.
Let's talk a little bit about visions in general and how you can fold them into your day-to-day, like professional life too, if you have, or personal life, if you want to start to take these concepts and apply them in your everyday work or anything like that. I put a little bit of thought into, and I want to see how you react to this. So I put a little bit of thought into what like a vision in general is why we're so drawn to them. you know, because what you think about, like, any CEO, any leader in a company, they always have a vision. Any coach on a any professional team, they always have some vision for their team. You ever, you know, you see any football coach that gets hired, they always say, like, three things that they pull out of a hat. It's like, we're going to run the ball, we're going to play great defense, and, you know, we're going to limit turnovers, or whatever the hell it ends up being, right? So these visions are like you said earlier, they're these aspirations and these ideals that we want to achieve, aspire to. And the reason we're drawn to them is because they're a visualization of a better reality than the one we're living now. No matter what it is, that vision is always going to be something that's an improvement over where we are right now. That's why we can rally around them. That's why we find them compelling. And that hope and that aspiration, it's rooted in a lack of self-limiting beliefs, like you were saying before. So
that, pull the weeds. Pull the
right.
Weeds.
And those things are things that we want to achieve, because
it would mean a lot about us to
achieve
these things.
Right. It would mean a lot. And you're, you know, it's also a sign, if you could achieve them, it's a sign that you are improving as an individual. And who doesn't want to be improving? We always want to feel like we're progressing and moving towards something better.
And what we talk about self-limiting beliefs, let's get a little more specific with those. One of them is the pursuit isn't worth it. Right? Like, okay, going after this vision, it's not worth it. Well, that's a reflection of self-worth. Right? You can take out the vision and put in yourself and say, like, you know, I'm not worth it, or I am worth it. And that's, you know, a narrative that a lot of people have is that it's not worth it to go after that new job. That's a question of self-worth. So asking oneself, hey, you want to weed the weeds, here's the technique. When did you decide that was true? What was the moment? Identify the moment that, you know, you decided that it wasn't worth it to go after your goals. And then, you know, try as you might, have a laugh at that moment once you get it out, on paper. This is something that I just wrapped up listening to Seth Wickersham on the Rich Eisen podcast, talking about the book It's Better to Be Feared, about Tom Brady and, you know, some of the things that made him great during his reign in New England. And he referenced one of his mentors at Michigan laughing at him when he would present self-limiting beliefs. He would laugh at Tom Brady. This is a weapon of super achievers. So I wanted to add some specificity to, you know, what self-limiting beliefs could look like, how to break it, and, you know, so you can really lean more into this achievement of the visions. Because I agree with you, they're born of hope for something more. They're born of hope that you can change the current circumstances and be an active participant in changing those circumstances, rather than waiting for them to change for you. That's key.
I went through this recently because about 2.5 months ago, I completed a job search, and I was working for my old company for 9 years. I decided I wanted to leave that company and start to look for a new job. Now, my experience at my old company was odd because I bounced around from engineering to marketing to sales to product management to operations. So I had like 5 or 6 different roles within that company that were spattered across my resume. And my resume contained a lot of these like 1 to 1.5 year stints where when I started interviewing, I thought that that would be detrimental to me because it didn't show an ability to stay in one role for a long time. So I was worried that I was this jack of all trades that wasn't a master and a master of none.
Yep.
And one of the things that I did before I actually started sending out applications and interviewing was I sat down with myself and I thought about a couple of things. I thought really hard about what story I was going to tell about my resume. And I came up with some clever approaches to soften those 1 year stints. So I said things like, oh, my old company was putting me through a development program. And so they were purposely bouncing me around so that I could get all this experience in all these different aspects of the company so that I would be more valuable in the role that I was in when I was interviewing. The other thing that I thought really hard about was what my vision was for my new job. Yep. What I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it, why I wanted those things. And because I had such a concrete visual and idea of that vision, and I had thought about how to tell the story of who I was able to speak with certainty in everything that in every answer that I gave. And certainty projects confidence. And so in all of my interviews, I projected this air of confidence and understanding of who I am and what I wanted. And that helped me in that job search get the job that I ultimately was looking for. And without making any concessions about, you know, in any capacity when it came time to accept the offer. So having that vision, thinking about it, contextualizing it, visualizing it, and then being able to speak to it and sell it to others is what's going to allow you to take that vision and turn it into not only a success for yourself, but a success for those around you.
Yeah. This is practical in that you can practice it. A couple ways to do it. The daily affirmations, they work. My sister just had a 3-month-old. She just had a newborn child that's 3 months old now and goes through language work with it. You know, daily affirmations around its beliefs. There's that. There's the perfect day. And then there's vision boards. I love vision boards. I'm glad, Fedji, you brought up the example of searching for a job because, you know, being in a similar situation, I've created vision boards for the roles that I want. And I'll send them in follow-up to the prospective employer to say, you know, I actually have a vision for how to execute this. And here's a perfect example of things I'll include in it. You know, one consistent one is hands and arms like coming out of two separate screens, shaking hands and agreeing on something, knowing that there's a lot of virtual conversations going on so that I'm someone who could facilitate even from a screen to have that handshake happen. You know, secondly, there's one image of a sailboat, you know, legions ahead of a group of other sailboats. And that's indicated. I have a slide in this vision board that says, hey, this is the client vision where I'm helping them achieve that. This is what I help the client do, get that far ahead of the competition. So those two images are burned in my mind. And I'm able to speak to, you know, myself, similar to how you talked about, in a very confident and comfortable manner because of the daily practice of affirmations. Someone asked me to describe myself in one word, and it was very easy. It was very simple. And those conversations are scary to have with yourself. They're scarier to have with other people when you haven't had them with yourself. So this moment is coming for you at one stage or another.
Yeah, I was surprised and in a pleasant way at how much easier it was to answer those difficult interview questions that I thought would stump me after having put so much thought into, you know, who I am and what I wanted and all of those things that I described earlier. It starts to alleviate the process. And like I said, when you're able to communicate that vision with certainty, you project confidence. Ultimately, these visions that you create for yourself they're catalysts for change. They're a form of energy that's going to take you from where you are today to where you want to be tomorrow. And so putting energy into that vision, into that idea, is going to reap benefits down the road. And Kyle said last episode, you know, we overestimate what we can do in a year and underestimate what we can do in 3. Visions work in a similar way.
This the best time to plant a tree was 15 years ago. Next best time is today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, practical, practice it. Daily affirmations, vision board, could be for your role, could be for your wellness, could be for your family. Those two things can go a real long way. And perfect day journaling, evolving that. Again, for me, it started a couple years ago. Now I have a one that's 5 pages long, and it takes place in a villa on the Italian coast. So my vision has evolved quite a bit in a 2-year time frame, and it's a much more satisfying life when you have some say over where you're going. Last topic to wrap up on. Jen Sincero wrote a book, How to Be a Badass, stop doubting yourself and living an awesome life. And she refers to people living in the big snooze as, where change is happening to them unconsciously. And when you wake up and you start to choose the change, she references the universe trying to drive a bus through your living room window. Like, there's going to be some resistance to, you implementing some of these changes for sure. And I can create a whole separate episode around some of the challenges in my life that surfaced after making some of these changes. Again, those are 3 ways to practice it, 3 ways to recognize, where you're being intentional about change and where you're being pulled. And these sports franchises that are able to recognize these patterns, and clubs as well, for, European soccer nuts, club versus team, I get it. With those parties as well, they're able to notice when they're having patterns that are where they're floating unconsciously from year to year, achieving, the same or diminishing results. It's painful as a fan. And, it's equally painful when you recognize these patterns in your own life. And that's good, because having the recognition of it is much more rewarding than sitting in the unconscious pattern.
Let's wrap up there.
Yeah, we thank you for joining, and we encourage you to like and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, on iTunes, and we have a YouTube channel coming out as well. So Mentality Monsters is the name. Please like and subscribe. I'm Kyle Langan, for my co-host, Fedja Buzancic. We'll see you next time.